welcome, folks, to another episode of Adventures into Sovereignty. As we get started with this new year, there is so much going on behind the scenes with Adventures into Sovereignty and New Earth Nation as we get all of our different projects underway. We really look forward to sharing this program with you tonight because we're going to bring you up to date on a lot of things that are going on in the foreclosure scene. Some of it's good news, some of it's not so good news, and we really just want to reach out to everybody who's dealing with a lot of the issues that so many in our team deal with. So we're just so pleased to have Dr. Christina Winsey as my co-host. She'll be joining us just any minute now.
Hello.
And yes, there she is.
I am here.
I hope you had a lovely evening tonight.
I did indeed. Wonderful.
Yes, well, we really are just getting started, and I have not even had a chance to say hello to Wes and Jenny yet. So we're going to say hello to Wes and Jenny and then just talk a few minutes about what's going on behind the scenes and get everybody up to date. So, Wes and Jenny.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, good to see you.
Good to see you.
They are still getting situated. We always have these little glitches with our computers and all this fun technology. So we are in good shape and ready to go. So, Christina, you have been dealing with this foreclosure situation for ages now. And I know because you're in an appeal situation, you can't talk a whole lot about it. But do you want to give us an introduction to what's going on in Florida right now? Because, man, this is another hotbed going on right now.
Are you referring to Osceola County? And
yep.
Okay. So what we've gotten from various blogs is that in Osceola County, Florida, the clerk of the court has initiated an investigation into what the banks have done in the last 2 years, specific cases in Osceola County. It's actually the clerk of the court that is looking for fraud in the documents from the banks. That's huge. That's huge for Florida because we are one of the major states with foreclosures just rampant. And so that's big news. There is a case that just happened that was quoted by or talked about by Neil Garfield in his blog, that the 4th District Court of Appeals remanded a case back to the lower courts because they had exhausted all efforts to figure out why there was robo-signing and fabrication of documents and backdating by HSBC. And that has been remanded back to the lower courts because they are wanting HSBC to prove what they're saying is true. That is amazing and huge. Now, it doesn't mean every case is going to be remanded. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be overturned, but it is a sign of some things changing. And later on, we're going to be talking about the Truth in Lending Act and how the Supreme Court has just ruled unanimously that is back on the table, that it is now something that homeowners and borrowers can look to as a potential way to have justice. So that's the primary thing that's going on in Florida, and the Truth in Lending, or TILA, is nationwide.
Yes, and that's going to be a biggie for anybody who is dealing with a foreclosure. You want to be sure that you are filing those TILA documents in. So as we go into that a little bit more later on in the show, that's something that you really, really want to pay attention to, because we're finding that there is remedy if you know how to go ahead and make sure you've got all of this into your case. You do not depend upon your lawyers to do this. This is something that you have to do yourself. I think that is the biggest lesson that we have all learned over the past couple of years as we've really been dealing with this, as Christina had to learn this from the ground up herself, how to defend her own situation when her lawyer quit on her just, you know, within a day or two. She ended up having to go and learn all of this stuff on her own and has come so much further as a result of that, as all of you can tell. And before we go further, let's just remind everybody that there are resources under your page, Christina Winsey, Dr. Christina Winsey, on the Adventures into Sovereignty show. There are a couple of resources there that will help you get into some of this information if you don't already.
Yes. There's a checklist there because as we've talked about before, and I'm so glad Jenny and Wes are on the show because Jenny and I have talked frequently about the kind of stamina it takes to go through this and to be pro se or to be fighting your case. And on my page is a document that's a checklist to help you determine whether you're really ready to go and fight your foreclosure. And there's also another document that is a whole list of resources, both free, some cost money, a lot of things there to help people. So they can get educated, they can find resources of all sorts of things to support them.
I think that's one of the most important things that we want to emphasize, that once you start into this, there are people to help you. And there's just a lot within the Anti-Foreclosure Network who literally will be there. They'll help you prepare for the cases. There are a number of things and a number of people who just, you know, have been through this themselves, and they dedicate their lives to helping other people. So if you need help, by all means, reach out to us. Rebecca at Humanitad, you know, we don't mind if you send us emails. And I think you had a separate email too, Christina, if you want to give out your email.
I do. It's Dr. Chris Choices Radio, Dr. Chris, C-H-R-I-S, Choices Radio at gmail.com.
Yes, so just know that, you know, we are available and we will help you find the resources that you need if you're going through some of these things. So, another thing I want to mention before we start bringing Wes and Jenny into the picture here is something else that happened this week that we found just quite interesting. Because we were on the show with Sasha Stone last week, Rod Class and I, and Chris Everly, one of the barristers from London who is working with us within the International Tribunal, and he and his whole team of 50 to 70 lawyers, they have put together the Emerging People's Human Rights Authority. They're joining with us as we're putting together the International Tribunal. And Chris said to me, as we were talking about, you know, people who had gotten into law because they really wanted to help people and they had found that they were stuck in the system. But he said, you just wait. You just wait and see what happens. As the lawyers begin to understand what's going on behind the scenes here, they're beginning to get the picture that it's corporations posing as governments, that it's not really governments, and they're on to this now, like my friend Ann would say, like white-owned rice. And so, oh yes, I miss you, Ann. So what is happening here? I had a long conversation today with Rod Class, and of course he keeps up with cases all over everywhere, and he was telling me about some of his friends who are going through a nasty eviction, even more nasty if it's possible than what Jen and Wes will be telling us about later. These people were literally met by the cops at the door. They had filed in some really, shall we say, damaging paperwork to the powers that be. And so they were literally drug out of their beds, both of them, and put in jail. I mean, they abused their rights to such a degree that what happened was some of the civil rights lawyers came in and are helping these people. There are three. What he described is exactly what we're talking about. He said they came in practically in their underwear because everything had been stolen and locked out from them. Mm-hmm. And they came in with these three of the fanciest suits that you could imagine. And it just about caused apoplexy from the judge on the bench because they saw what was going on now. So we are beginning to see that some of this is beginning to shift a little bit. So I just thought that was a story that I had to relate after Chris had made such a big deal about it last week.
Absolutely.
That's where the money is.
There's some benefit to having sharks in the world, huh?
Oh, I tell you what, it's going to get interesting out there. All right, shall we bring Wes and Jenny into this picture?
Yes, we should.
Yes, and Wes, I just hope that everybody has had a chance to watch that video that you and Cindy K. Currier put together not long after you all had gone through this whole eviction process. And you know, I'll let Jenny summarize your whole situation in just a little bit, but I would love for you to share what it felt like for you to see those cops in flak jackets come in and surround Jenny with an assault rifle, because you did such a good job of giving a sense of the unreal situation that you faced here in America. So let everybody know what really went down that day.
Okay. Well, as we were throwing our last-minute belongings over the fence, we had noticed a van parked a little ways down our street, and it became kind of suspicious. Why is that van sitting there? Because that's unusual, because nobody parks on the street where we were at the time.
It's a dead-end street, really short street.
Yeah, it ends in a cul-de-sac. So I saw a gentleman talking to someone in the van and walked over and started a conversation with the gentleman that was there. And he immediately just started saying, you know, I'm sorry you're having to go through this. Things will get better. And I'm like, Well, who are you? And he says, well, I'm the real estate broker for this foreclosure. I'm like, oh, okay. So as I was just chatting with him, asking him questions, Jenny had come up as well and asked, what did you ask him? Do you like what you do?
Yeah, I asked him, you know, once I found out who he was, I said, do you like what you do? And first I said, how many of these foreclosures do you do in a year? And he said, about 25. And I said, really, that many? Do you like what you do? And he said, yeah, I do. And that just really, that really ticked me off. So I didn't have a whole lot left to say to him.
Yeah, when I saw Jenny get kind of short and quick with him, I was getting a little nervous about when the sheriff deputies would show up, how she would react to them. And as I was talking to this real estate broker, I guess one of the sheriff vans pulled up, and Jenny immediately went back over in front of our yard. And I was still talking to the real estate broker. And when I glanced over to where Jenny was, I saw this sheriff deputy in full gear with an assault rifle hanging off his back. And it startled me. I'm like, why is an assault rifle?
Well, there were seven of them and seven assault rifles.
Yeah, and they're all walking towards Jenny, and he says, well, I guess you better get over there. I'm like, yeah. So Jenny's talking to them, and I'm coming up behind them, and one of them says to the other, eyes open. And, of course, they were talking about me, and as I approached, not one of them asked me who I was. I thought that was very strange. So they had been in a little bit discussion with Jenny at the time, by the time I got there, and
I heard one of them say, watch out for tripwires, as one of them decided to start entering onto the property going through one of the driveway gates, because we had a fenced yard and gates on the driveway, which we kept locked all the time with no trespass signs. So, of course, we didn't have our locks on the gates, and, you know, they were able to let themselves in, but... essentially, all I did was answer their questions with questions. I didn't really give them any information. They were there to just, process the eviction and move on. And I knew that, you know, there was no reason for me to, or, you know, they weren't there to reason with me or me to them to reason with me or, you know, have any conversation. I couldn't invite them in for coffee. You could tell they were just there to do their thing and move on. And I noticed down the street there was a fire truck. So they were prepared for, you know, whatever we might have done, set booby traps or, you know, blown up the house or whatever it was they thought we might do. I think it was based on the fact that we had been profiled, you know, from all the paperwork that we had filed over the past 6 to 7 years over the process of the foreclosure. And so I just said, you know, Wes, let's just get out of here. So that's what we did. We figured we'd leave the property and get on down the street before they figured out that the front door was nailed shut.
Oh, goodness. You had put so much into that beautiful dream house, Jenny. I mean, we all just have really cried about this the whole time because you did everything. What people don't understand, when they think, oh, foreclosure, you just didn't make your payments. It is so far beyond that story that if people are still at that place of lack of understanding, then I really encourage you to understand what's going on because you had done everything you possibly could. You had gone to talk to the bank. You had tried to renegotiate. Give us just a little bit of that history so that people get a sense of how these people were so unwilling to work with you at that point in time. I mean, the story that just absolutely just will never leave me is Bo Brickle, who was there in June as we did that interview, and we really learned how his whole real estate empire was brought down by the banks with deliberation. That's the only thing you could talk about. So share a little bit. Share a little bit about this 6-year journey and what you've learned.
Well, when the economy tanked in 2008, so did my business. And, you know, that took away our ability really to make the payment on a regular, you know, basis to how we had been. So I had an office building that I was trying to sell because we moved our office basically into the home studio that we had just built and finished. And so, you know, I wasn't able to sell the office building, and the bank swooped in and foreclosed on that basically before I knew what was happening. You know, I had just started to learn about the fraud in the financial industry and, you know, started to do paperwork on that, but, you know, wasn't far enough along to stop the foreclosure of the office. But I was trying to work with the bank on the house. I was, you know, essentially begging them to work with me, you know, let's work out something, you know, is there anything you can do? Can I make partial payments? You know, can we refinance? They weren't willing to do anything at all. They weren't working with me in any shape or form. And so even when they refused partial payments, I'd still make partial payments and tell them, you know, I'll have the rest of it, you know, in another week. And they would freeze that payment. So that it was showing that I was making no effort whatsoever until the balance was put in there. Then they would show that I had made a payment, you know, X number of days late. rather than showing that I was making an effort. So that those sort of shenanigans were going on while I was trying to, you know, learn about what was happening. And then, you know, I call him a mentor, who basically, you know, exposed us to a lot of the fraud and helped us to, you know, go down the rabbit hole and learn more and more. And so I did every single process that I could find and administrative remedies that could help, you know, from the TILA and everything that was coming across my desk. I was doing it. I was filing it. I was working it. We were going multiple hearings on the foreclosure. The clerk of court wasn't willing to listen. And, of course, in a non-judicial state, the clerks process the foreclosure. They don't have to look at a single thing the homeowner ever puts into the case. And you know, of course, the clerk never looked at any of our stuff. We had like a 4-inch thick file. She never looked at the first piece. So I actually moved it to federal court. It was there for 2.5 years where the bank's lawyers and I filed paperwork back and forth, umpteen different affidavits that I filed into the case, none of which were ever rebutted, should have resolved the case at that point. They were all ignored. They didn't do, you know, the judge ignored the actual process that should have taken place. He kicked our case back to state court where he knew it would be foreclosed, and immediately they did move forward and do the foreclosure. And so the very next day I filed the notice of appeal. And then the next day after that, I had a call from the clerk saying that if I didn't pay $10,000 to stay the sale, that they would move forward with the sale of the property. And I said, well, I'm not going to pay you $10,000. So, you know, I figured our appeal was going to be a moot point at that, you know, at that point. So a girlfriend went with me. I watched the sale take place on the courthouse steps. You know, I served the substitute trustee a courtesy notice. She threatened to have me arrested for assaulting her because of the way I served her with the paperwork. And then, you know, we moved out of the house. We thought, you know, it's a done deal. There's nothing else we can do. We found a friend that was willing to rent a house to us. We moved out. We went through the entire year there. We had to sign a year lease. Nothing was happening on the house. No sheriffs were showing up. We actually moved friends in. People were living in our house, you know, maintaining it for us. And then when our year lease was up, we moved back in it. And then just 4 days after we began the process of moving back in, we got a notice that the appeal hearing was happening. And we thought, wow, we're actually going to have the appeal, because we didn't think it was going to take place. So I immediately called the lawyer and asked them if they would postpone it. And they refused. So we showed up for the appeal. We had lots of witnesses there. I processed a ton of IM documents into the case. The judge even sat on the bench and said she saw our paperwork. We had a precipice. She even asked me, what is a precipice? And I said, it's an order on the court. And she just got really big eyes and, you know, looked over at the lawyer and asked the lawyer if she had her paperwork ready. And the lawyer just stood up and said, Your Honor, they didn't pay the $10,000, so this appeal hearing is moot point anyway. So the judge dismissed our appeal, threw it out, ignored everything we had done. So we knew that, you know, it was coming. We were going to be evicted, but we didn't know when. And it took another 9 months. And during that 9 months time, I continued to file paperwork into the case. And at a certain point, the clerk of court told her staff, don't accept any more of her paperwork, period. And they can't do that, but they did. So we eventually did have the sheriff show up with an eviction notice saying that we had 10 days, but they were being sneaky and didn't serve us the paperwork for 3 whole days. So we didn't have 10 days. We only had 7. So when we moved back in, I you know, we both felt that, you know, it would be wise not to move everything back in. So we had half of our belongings in storage already. So it made the 7-day move a lot easier. Had we had that entire house full of furniture, we would have never gotten it out in 7 days.
Yeah, our first move took 45 days to move out.
Yeah.
Our second move took, what, 28 days. And then our final eviction was 7 days. And from that time that you get that notice, in 7 days, you have to prepare for that mentally, physically, and spiritually to get that job done.
And find somewhere to go.
And we have three cats and two dogs, and it's very difficult to find a place that will allow you to have that many animals.
But we've been fortunate both times that we had to move out of our home that we had good friends that allowed us to rent from them, knowing our situation. So, you know, if we didn't have our community of friends here that are awake and aware, we would have been in a lot worse shape than we are now.
And the interesting thing that you have shared, Jen, is that your business has just recovered big time. So if you had found a way, if there had been anybody with integrity throughout this whole process, you could have probably salvaged this home that you've spent your whole life. I mean, you know, it was just your dream house. We all knew that. But the truth of it is, you know, you've got a substitute trustee who has signed off. The clerk of court took their paperwork, and they have not proved in any way, shape, or form that they have any rights at all to walk into this home that you have put so much time and effort and love into.
Right.
It's this whole thing is beginning to unravel from the standpoint of people beginning to understand the sheer depth of the fraud that's really going on here. And right. So,
the clerk of court has five things that they have to look at from the bank for a foreclosure. And if the bank has information relating to those five items, the clerk doesn't look into the fact that, you know, if this information is true, correct, provable, none of that. They just make sure that they have the five things, and then they rubber stamp the foreclosure.
That's when you experience how the deck is stacked.
Yeah. And the other thing is that there should be such a cloud on that title.
Right. Because of all the paperwork that I filed.
Go ahead, Christina.
Well, I was going to say what I experienced when I was in court, and I was dealing with the magistrate, and anything that I brought up about their paperwork, all they kept saying was, well, that's what they'll have to prove at trial. Yeah. That's what they'll have to prove at trial. And it's like they never proved it, and the foreclosure gets rubber stamped.
Right. Just like they ignore affidavits when they're not supposed to. The other side's supposed to rebut an affidavit point for point. Or the affidavit stands unrebutted and stands as proof and judgment in the case. All that was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Just like what Rod's experiencing in his journey.
And so, you know, and this is exactly why this team behind the scenes is working to get this international tribunal set up, because it is the only thing between us and the corruption in the courts. And as we're sending out in our newsletter, this Dr. Richard Cordero has done the most amazing job of really getting down and exposing the judges, how they are appointed for life, how that they protect themselves from any chance of having anybody come against them. Like, they have a 99.8% freedom pass to not get convicted if they are found of wrongdoing. So it's like it is such an old boys network that we all have had to find ways to work together. And I'm just really curious right now, because you're able to start beginning to rebuild your lives from a financial standpoint, but what else have you thought about doing? Have you really just gotten to the place where it's so frustrating to you right now that you haven't found other alternatives? You know, where do you stand? Because as everybody always says, it's not over until you say it's over. Have you found anything at this point in time, or What are you considering? What, or are you still in shock so much that you haven't found a way to move forward as far as continuing with the paperwork?
Well, as far as the paperwork goes, my business has picked up so much, and we've had so little of it for so long. Right now, while it's happening, I am focused 100% on rebuilding that and trying to, you know, we put everything we had, every bit of our money into that house. And so we've had nothing for the last 6 years. We've just been living, you know, week to week on whatever we could scrounge. And so, you know, I'm trying to rebuild, you know, us financially in some fashion with the business. And so right now, paperwork wise, I haven't done anything. It's not that I'm not going to do anything. From the day after Christmas and the day after January, just all of a sudden, I have, I don't know, 25 or 26 prospects of projects for renovations and new homes that I've been working all this month. I haven't had a single day off this month. It's just been nonstop, go, go, go. And, you know, when I'm not in meetings, I'm trying to draw. And so I haven't had an opportunity since the beginning of the year to get back and refocus on it. But I do plan to do that. I'm not sure what our next step is going to be. There's lots and lots of massive changes taking place globally that the media in the United States is not talking about. And people in the United States were lied to by the president the other night. You know, people think that everything is hunky-dory and that, you know, the dollar is good and, you know, the economy is good and all of this. And, you know, that's why the people are coming out of the woodwork to me to now have renovations and new houses done. But the bottom's going to fall out, you know.
It certainly is. The banks in New York just, you know, all the big banks have just laid off 50,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's coming. And people are
back.
We got to prepare while we can, you know, while we can, you know, a little bit of money's coming in, you know, do a little bit of prepping, you know. I've never focused on being a prepper, but right now we may need it for a couple of weeks. So, you know, that's what we're working on. Plus the fact that I've clouded the title so much.
Yes.
And with the house now being on the market, I am getting a lot of inquiries coming through my website of people who have found out that I designed that house, and I don't know, you know, if the realtor's telling them or what, but they're asking me what I can tell them about the house. You know, what are the green features on it? You know, what are the if there are structural issues, if there are leaks, if there's any, you know, issues with it, they want to know that, you know, and all I want to tell them is, you know, don't buy a house with a clouded title. Number one, you're you know, assisting the problem.
Yes.
And number two, it's going to come back to bite you, because when all this comes out, we're going to get our house back.
Yes. Yes.
And so, I mean, you know, that would be the first thing I would do is just tell them, look, there's a cloud on the title. You'd be a fool if you buy this house. I would be just absolutely clear about it, because it's true. You did everything within your power to do that, and it's your house.
That's right. And when I got the very first email from somebody who was interested, it was the day after Christmas. And when I read that email, if somebody wanted to buy our house, it would just hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, the last thing I wanted to hear was somebody wanted our home. But at the same time, I don't want our home sitting over there, you know, empty and you know, not taken care of and lonely. You know, we loved our home, and everybody that came there loved it. We had a great time there. You know, so it's sad that it's sitting there by itself, but yet I don't really want anybody else in it.
Oh, I know, and it really does just get to be a situation where you've got this trustee-type situation in a non-judicial foreclosure state. At least Christina is working in a state where they have to go before the judges multiple times. I mean, Christina, how many times did you go to court over last year? And this was not you know, the lawyers had been handling it up to this year, and you must have been in court just almost every other month.
Yeah, pretty much. But that's because I wouldn't stop writing papers, you know. I mean, I stayed very active in my case. I made sure that I kept abreast of what they were doing, and I was doing my research, and I was trying everything I could think of. I mean, I brought legitimate cases in my answer and affirmative defenses. I had legitimate things that I was bringing forward, and I brought them to the hearings, and it was shot down time and again. You know, the magistrate played games. He seemed, now don't be fooled, folks, because the magistrate may seem very nice. Mine was, he would explain things to me because I was pro se, and he would take the time. Now, you may not understand how things work, and, you know, you think he's trying to be the good cop, right? Well, he's not on your side. I guarantee you he's not on your side. And so, you know, I was in court quite frequently because I made sure that I was delaying anything that they were trying to do. And there is a procedure they have to follow. So you do have a right to file your paperwork. And I would highly suggest that you do everything you can to stall this whole procedure. And there are ways to learn how to do this documentation, and it's worth learning how to fight your case. If you can't afford a lawyer, the best thing you could do is to learn how to fight your case. And in the resources document that I've put on my page, you'll find all kinds of resources, some free, some you have to pay for, but there are even document templates, and there's just a whole ream of stuff that will help you, and groups that will help you. So I highly recommend that you spend, if you are looking at the situation and saying, I know there's fraud here, and even if you don't know there's fraud here, the chances are really strong that there are. I would say, and Jenny and Wes, would you agree that 95% to 99% of the time there's fraud? Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I would say, take your documents, get your ducks in a row, look at your situation with work, with family, with money, with time, and with personal stamina and ability to manage stress. And what are you willing to do to save your home? It's really down to that. What does it mean to you? Because it's not every situation that warrants fighting in court. There's no shame to that. It's really individual. And if you are someone like me who can't let it go, I come from a fighting spirit, and I can, yeah, I know. And when there's fraud and they're trying to get over on me, that's not going to happen. You know, so for me, there was no choice. And no, I didn't have money and I didn't have time. But I made the time. It was all of 2013 that I spent with my nose in the computer, in the documents, talking to people. It's what you have to do if it's worth it to you to fight the case. And if you'd rather just let it go because you've got so much else going on, there's no shame to that. It's just knowing whether it's right for you.
Right. And one of the things I would suggest that anybody in this situation do to start with is read your actual loan, quote unquote, loan documents, and, you know, enlighten yourself as to what you got yourself into, because nobody reads them when they go to the foreclosure table. They're all excited. They sign their signature 100 times and they go on their way. Nobody knows what they've agreed to, that they, you know, already says that you already owned the property and you're giving it to the bank. You owned it from the signature, and you're agreeing now to be a tenant in your own property.
How did they manage to pull all of this scam off on us and we did not know it? Let's just take a few minutes and go over everything that we have learned. As we've gone through this with Rod Class and everything else that we all have gone through this year, because we can trace it right back now to the War Powers Act of 1917. And I don't think it hurts a thing for people to have to go back and really understand what's been pulled over on us. First of all, you have to understand that this was 100 years. We're almost 100 years into this now. And we the people are just now beginning to understand what they really set up. Now, it went back as far as the corporation part of it, even back to the Civil War era, 1864, as we brought one of those pieces into the picture last week. But let's just look at it. What did that War Powers Act do in 1917? It was called Trading with the Enemy. I mean, here is where you need a good history lesson. You know, you have to go back and you have to study and learn all of this, because this was World War One. This happened just about the time they were having all these wars with Germany, and you had people like Ford who were selling their cars and doing all of these things, and you had Prescott Bush and the Bush family all right in the middle of all of this stuff for both of these world wars. And they said, now, wait a minute, we don't want you trading with the enemy. If you're over here on American soil and you're doing, you know, you're making money off this war, we want to make sure you have permission from the government to do that. So we're going to require you to have permission, and we're going to require you to have a license that says you have permission, and we're going to have you to register if you're going to do that. Well, this was 1917. They never did stop any of this War Powers Act. They kept it on the books. And they did all of these things in 1920. They set everything up so that they would get the nurses. They bribed the nurses so that they would begin to talk all these parents into signing this birth event. You know, they were the informant on the birth event. They got paid to be bribed to get people to sign this birth registration event without ever asking any questions. And they just did one thing after another like this. In 1933, there was a major national emergency. Now, you think about the things that are going on right now, but in a much, 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 much more desperate scale. You know some of your neighbors now who have not had jobs in years, you know, several years. There are a lot of people who have a really bad situation. Well, in 1929, people were jumping out of the buildings because they had lost all of their savings by putting them in the Federal Reserve banks and, you know, all of this. So 1933, the Banking Emergency Act was declared. And the War Powers Act was amended. It's called the Amendatory Act, and the United States people were added to the War Powers Act. They had to come in and have license and registration for trading with the enemy. In 1917, the American people were not the enemy of the government. By the time 1933 came along, we became the enemy. But the whole thing here is that the whole purpose of the War Powers Act was that they conscripted all of the resources of the people for the war effort in 1917. You had to have the license and registration in order for the whoever was in charge of the war emergency to keep up with those resources and pay you back. So follow this just a minute now. You had become the enemy of the state. You had to have the license and registration, like the voter registration, the driver's license. You had to have permission for everything that used to be a right. And they started pulling all of this on to us and saying, here's how we're going to keep up with the resources that you are giving to the government for the war effort, and we have to take care of all of your bills. You turn us in a bill and we will pay for it. It's our fiduciary responsibility because we've taken all of your resources. You no longer have any ability to pay. And so now we'll do that for you. Okay, so what happens in a foreclosure situation when you go to the bank and or not in a foreclosure, in a loan, you go and you sign your name to that paper from the bank, and what does the bank do? They take that down to the Federal Reserve Bank, and they get the money, and they bring it back, and they hand you a check. Well, that check has just 100% paid for your home, because that's the way you're supposed to requisition your funds. You go to the bank, because the bank is the one who's supposed to be the fiduciary in charge of this. They pay the funds. But instead of doing that, they figured out a way that they can pirate and plunder and take advantage of this themselves. They turn around and say, oh, well, here's a check. We're going to do some double entry bookkeeping here, and we're going to put it down on this side as if that money really belongs to us, and then we're going to give you this note here that you're going to sign, and you're going to agree to pay us one, you know, we're going to charge you interest so that you'll never get this house paid off, and we're going to get double this money the first time around plus the interest. And then come back and charge you for the foreclosure when they've already got all of this money that you've been paying them all of this time. And it is fraud from the get-go. And people look at me and say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I talked to my local banker about that. That's not really the way it works. But let me tell you, folks, that is the way it works. This is just a little bit of a picture here of how this is done, but what we're putting together as we're getting ready to go to this court case, the first one with the International Tribunal, we're going to have this down in such a flow that you'll have to look at the congressional records and the legislative acts, and you will see that what we're telling you about how a loan is put together is exactly what's going on here. And then, you know, business as usual, well, we steal your house. That's what this whole thing is all about. So when you get this picture, then you do become very determined to fight and do everything you can. So what did I miss in that explanation now?
I don't think you missed a thing. I think that was very thorough. I think it bears repeating over and over again because it's so truth is stranger than fiction, and it boggles the mind. And so many people really have not understood in the depth that they need to what's really been going on. So
what they're really after is the signature. The signature is what gives them the access to your funds.
Yeah.
And they can get it even from your application, not even signing the loan documents, just applying for a loan, they can go and get that money.
Yes. How many times do you think they use our signatures to fund this over and over and over?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, we've traced it. You know, I will never forget, I was on the call, on one of Rod's calls with Rudy Thomas, when Raja, the guy who did the SEC audits, he had been going through a foreclosure on his $500,000 house. Now, here was a guy, this is all he did. He did the bank examination. And Rudy was telling him about all of what we had discovered. And he said, you got to be kidding. I don't believe any of this. He went in there and he took his own $500,000 loan and he traced it step by step by step by step. That $500,000 loan turned into $93 million for all of these people down the road. When you start talking about derivatives and the securitization of a loan, this is what we're talking about. So that there is so much money on the table behind the scenes that these people are making out like bandits, and then they dare come and try to throw an 80-year-old elderly woman out of her home that she's been living in all of her life because she went in and took a loan out just before her husband died to help him with his medical bills, and they carry on with this anyway, and we think that's okay. You know, it's up to us to start looking at all of this and really understanding and start asking questions and educate ourselves, just like Jenny and Wes have done, just like Christina has done, just like Jennifer Williams has done. You know, all of us have been through hell this year with some of this. We all have these stories, and we know how many of you are in the same shape and wondering what on earth you're going to do. And you know, it's the kinds of things that we're doing here to educate ourselves and to come up with solutions, even though that solution might be nothing more than sending that letter to that judge that says, wait a minute here, there is something not right about what is going on in our country. It's our country, and we are not consenting to any more of this. You know, it really is. That's where we are. As we begin to learn, you know, we do have choices. And if we don't make those choices, then they're made for us. And a big part of what Jenny and Wes went through was this sovereign citizens type stuff where they're trying to profile us because we dare ask questions. Now, look at the definitions here. Sovereign means not a slave. No masters, no rulers, no hidden contracts. Well, a citizen, by definition, is this corporate legal person that they have put in that is a slavery contract. It is a surety contract. That is the thing that everybody has really got to get. You know, you hear all this, lose the name, all of that kind of thing. It's because they have married the legal person with the natural living person in such a way that if we're not careful, we get stuck with this slavery contract and we have to act because they're embezzling those funds behind the scenes. And so it's just an awful lot to wrap your minds around. And I don't know how to help you do it easier other than just to invite you to go on our site, Adventures into Sovereignty. There's a lot of education there. There's a lot of education everywhere.
Yeah, I actually called the clerk of court on the carpet and said, you know, this is corrupt. You have been served settlement. The bank had been served settlement. The lawyer had been served settlement. And she had settlement in the file and told me she didn't see it. And when she chose to sign the foreclosure order, I called her corrupt. I said, you are aiding and abetting a corrupt system, and you are corrupt. I stood over her as she sat in her little chair and looked down on her and told her this. And she threatened to throw me in contempt of court. And once you know how much money the banks have made over and over and over again on these fraudulent deals, and then they foreclose on you, like for instance on our house, they claimed we owed $1,040,000 plus now all these late fees and what have you, and now they have our house on the market for $529,000.
Yes, isn't that sick?
People think that the bank's losing money on the deal. The bank has lost nothing. That's why they can do it for whatever they choose to do it for, you know, selling it for half of what they say we owe, and then have the ability to come back after us for the difference.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, the difference between whatever they say you owe and what they sell it. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They said on Jenny's office building, they came after her for the difference.
Yep, and they tacked on an extra $100,000 in lawyer fees and got a judgment against me.
Oh, boy. And they're entrapping people. They're doing things like telling people that don't pay for 90 days, and then you can be apply for a remodification. And then they deny the remodification, they put you in default, and then send you to foreclosure.
Yep. And the few people I know that have refinanced to make their payment less, they end up with a larger payment than they had before they refinanced.
Right. Yeah. It was done with intentionality. I mean, absolutely. It was done with intentionality to take the property. What was that quote that one of the Rothschilds said, you know, if we take over the printing of the money supply, it doesn't matter to us who's in charge of the government. We will own your children, and they will not have a bed to sleep in when we are done. This is some of the things that, you know, that we're putting together, this Okay, what was his name? The House guy, Mendel House. I can't remember his first name. What we read during the Rod seminar in July, this guy told us 100 years ago exactly what was going to happen in our country. And so as you begin to go back and you really learn from this standpoint, all of the things that are going on behind the scenes that were done, then it's time for us to wake up and say, this is our country. This is our home. This is our land. You know, you're just coming in. You're just a mafioso bandit. You know, let's tell the truth about what's really going on here. And then when you realize that it is corporations, just exactly like a Walmart and a McDonald's, that have private shareholders, and these people claim to be our government, they walked into the public offices and occupied our country and didn't tell us and said it was a state secrets act, that they didn't have to do that. And so they've done all of this to keep it from us for the last 100 years. Well, they're not keeping it from us any longer. And it's not too late. It's not too late. And that's why we're doing, I wish you could see what's going on behind the scenes. Wes has been working with his transcription team. Wes, how many people do you have working with you now?
We just added 3 new people, which is very exciting for me, because we had a few before, but they've kind of got busy in other areas of what we're doing. But we have about 4 or 5 right now.
Yeah. And so, and we've got, that's one team. They're doing a lot of the transcriptions so that we've got all of this material at our fingertips as we're putting both the source documents and the casework together. Steve Herr is working behind the scenes, and my gosh, what his team's done. We've got teams working on the websites to put together the International Tribunal site. We have people working on the AIS site. And we have, you would not believe, the international group that is coming together to help put this court together, this tribunal, so that the citizens can begin to hold these agents accountable. It's really been exciting because we are determined, you know, we're the people we've been waiting for, and everybody has really just come out and started working together. You know, we just find our little piece of the puzzle and start working together to do all of this. Behind the scenes, we're putting together as many resources as we can to start helping people who say, I'm tired of this. I'm not a slave. I'm not going to let anybody think I'm a slave. What do I need to do to get my status clear so that none of these agents can claim that I am? And, you know, Jenny and Wes have gone through all of this. We have to get more people involved if we're going to begin to educate the clerks of court and all of these people and not let them get away with it. And before this is done, we're going to find a way to help Wes and Jen get in there and not lose their home to all of these people, because it's not right, you know, just plain and simple. But second of all, you know, if we don't do it, who's going to?
How true. It's about this groundswell of people all over the country, all over the world, that are really waking up and starting to take action. And as you love to say, Rebecca, non-action is no longer an option. And so we're building an energy. We're building a massive movement that's going to make this shift. And as you know, we talked just in the beginning about Osceola County Clerk of the Court. We talked about the Fourth District Court of Appeals. There are cases coming out more and more where some of the courts are actually saying, wait a minute, something's wrong here. So the more you get involved, each one of you, even if it's just in your own case, the more you are adding to the voices that are raising and saying, stop, this isn't going to happen anymore. So it's vital.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just takes, you know, do your part. Just stand up and say no more. Draw your line in the sand and do whatever it is that you feel guided to do.
And I think it's fear that holds people back. You know, there are, yes, are there people who've been like this couple that you talked about, Rebecca, in Ohio, that was met at the door and taken to jail and ended up in court in their pajamas practically? There are people who have been brought, you know, into prison for a traffic violation. I mean, yeah, do we have a lot of frightening things going on? We absolutely do. But if we allow fear to overtake us, then we will never get anywhere. And that's what they're counting on. They're trying to make examples of people. And they're thinking, if we make an example of this person here who says something about sovereignty or about the corrupt corporate government or speaks out, then maybe we'll influence another 100 to 1,000 people who knows them, or if it gets in the news, we'll influence a whole bunch of people to be frightened of us and the bully's still in force. Well, right. That's just not going to work anymore. For those of us willing to fight for our freedom, we know what is going to happen if we don't. Our children will not inherit a planet that they can live free on, and that's just not acceptable in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And you know what I found as I started working with this, and you know I've been at it for a pretty long time now as far as my involvement with the court type of situation, just being one of those researchers and observers and working with this, just like I worked with Christina last year. You know, I mean, my deal with this actually started with an 8-year relationship with Mac McCleskey, who was on Georgia's death row. I picked 3 names when a good old Baptist preacher from North Georgia challenged me. After I wrote an article in the paper, he challenged me. He wrote an article entitled "The Gospel According to Ronnie," talking about Ronnie Reagan. And he looked at it and said, "I challenge you. I'm going to throw down the gauntlet. If you're going to make all these accusations about the poor and all the things that you're saying, go visit the homeless. Go visit people in prison. Go walk in the shoes of those who are hungry. And then come back and tell me what's going on in your world." Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's exactly what I did. I took 3 names off of a list on a yellow paper. I'll never forget this as long as I live, because I just said eeny, meeny, miny, moe. I didn't know anybody in prison, had never done any of this kind of thing. Well, I just so happened to pick a man who was on Georgia's death row, whose name is synonymous like Roe v. Wade. McCleskey v. Kemp, my friend, became the poster child for the death penalty legislation as this Rehnquist court changed the rules on everybody. I had a front row seat for 8 years to what was going on in the courtrooms of the Supreme Court. I was reading all of these decisions as it was coming down and affecting this man that had become like my brother. And to do that from that standpoint, let me tell you something. That I went to that pardons and parole hearing, and my husband and I were talking about this. He went with me. We were talking about this the other day, and he said, you know, that taught me right there that there was no such thing as justice in the courtrooms of America, because if 5 judges could look at that evidence and go ahead and make a man die when there was so much corruption in that court case, just so they would say they had been able to fry somebody that they suspected of being a cop killer, and a black person on top of that. You know, I'll just have to tell you, Warren called me about 2 hours before he went before that death penalty chamber. And that man was ministering to all of his family. The main thing he told me was to never, ever let the bitterness overtake me over the situation, and to tell that to his family to be sure that they didn't allow that, but that they would find a way to stand up and hold the system accountable. Now, I was asked to speak at Mac's funeral service. I was the only non-preacher who was there, and it was my honor to do this because Mac McCliskey broke open my heart and made me understand that I had to look at this stuff and get more deeply involved in those people who did not have a voice for themselves. So if you look at somebody like me, you know, that's why I do these shows. That's why I work so hard. I mean, I'm working 50 and 60 hours a week to get this team moving and doing all of these things because I care, you know, because I picked up the gauntlet. And it's those kinds of things that we do as we just get in there and we start really, really opening our eyes and looking at those who are less fortunate, or who are in pain or hurting or, you know, whatever the situation is. And I'll bet that Christina and Wes and Jenny will all say that they have learned so much as a result of going through these things themselves that they will never be the same again.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Indeed. Yeah, and, you know, we've spent a lot of time. I have certainly spent tons of time sharing this information with anybody who will listen, you know, and the average person just thinks I've lost my marbles, you know, and we've actually lost friends over it. But there are some people that are starting to, you know, get a little bit of it and are starting to be willing to hear more. And, you know, as more and more people are waking up, yeah, you know, we're going to make a real difference.
And you know, you absolutely never know how much something that you do is going to change a person's life. Now, I tell you what, I give thanks every day of my life for this pastor by the name of Bo Turner in Clarksville, Georgia, who dared to challenge what I had written in that article in my local newspaper, because throwing down the gauntlet to me in that way, and me listening and paying attention to what he had to say, it rang so true to my spirit and my soul that I picked up that gauntlet, and that changed my life forevermore. My life will never be the same because he dared challenge me and say something that really hit me at that point in time. So even though somebody might think we're crazy at the time that we share, we never know what's really going on behind the scenes or how it might affect our lives down the road. So, you know, I guess maybe I'm going to throw down the gauntlet today. If you think that this foreclosure is just about somebody going in and not paying the bank when the bank gave them all the money and they were supposed to pay it back, I'm going to challenge you to go start doing your homework and really start asking the questions. And I'm going to tell you one really good place to start, because one of my favorite movies that did this was Freedom to Fossicism with Aaron Russo. And another, any of the stuff that Michael Moore has put together is good. And if somebody in your family says, oh, don't you dare go listen to these people or whatever, if they tell you not to do something, go do it. Because those are the ones who are really going to give you the information.
Absolutely. Well, we're almost out of time, and I wanted to do a little bit on the Truth in Lending Act, Rebecca. Should we continue?
Yes.
Because with you throwing down the gauntlet, we've got to talk a little bit about the truth in lending.
Yes. I'm sure Don will not crucify us if we keep going. So, yes, by all means. Forgot about that. You should have joined in. Thank you.
But you were so eloquent. I didn't want to stop your story. It was great. And I'm going to be reading a little bit, so if I'm looking down, forgive me. But I there's so much information. I'm going to be really brief because we really don't have a lot of time. The U.S. Supreme Court, if you haven't seen our newsletter or if you haven't read this anywhere, the U.S. Supreme Court, usually bitterly divided by partisan lines, unanimously put TILA, the Truth in Lending Act, back on the table. So what is the Truth in Lending Act? It is a federal law called the called the Truth in Lending Act. Its principal purpose, according to all accounts and seminars given on the subject, is to provide the borrower with a clear choice of lenders with whom he or she wants to do business, and clear terms for comparison of terms offered by each lender. It is also designed to smoke out undisclosed parties who are receiving compensation, and it has real teeth in clawing back such undisclosed compensation. Essentially, the mortgage becomes void if you notify the pretender lender, which all of you have, that you rescind the transaction within TILA time frame. It's usually a 3-year statute of limitations. However, we have a lot more to cover, which I can't cover tonight, but there are some reasons why that statute would not hold, and it's going to be argued back and forth in a lot of different cases. But what this is coming from Neil Garfield. He's got an incredible blog, and we're going to put it up on the website so that you have some information, and you can link to his blog and his show. But he talks about the fact that there are reasons why the statute of limitations will not hold, and some of it has to do with fraud in the documents, but it's also the fact that they lied to you out and out, you know, pretending that they were giving you something that they weren't, and also that they hid on you who was really funding the loan. So it's all about that securitization, where you come to the table and you think that the person, the entity on your document, loaned you the money. But what they really are is either a loan originator or an investment bank that sold your loan to some investors on Wall Street, told them that they were going to make a lot of money by investing in mortgage-backed securities. Now, this may seem like baby information to some of you, but for some of you, this is really important. And it's so vital that you really take a look at all the basics of the loan contract. Who made the offer? Who accepted the offer? What were the terms? Who loaned the money? Who were the parties? Was the loan completed by the parties that are written on the contract? This is the key. And the answer in so very many cases is that no, they are not the same. There's a ton on this, Rebecca, and I'm not sure which way to go with it. So do you want me to just keep reading, or do you want me to, do you want to ask me something and I'll see if I have it in my notes, or do you want to just say we've got to call it quits and we'll send them to Neil Garfield's articles?
Well, I would ask a question. If you were having to face a lot of this foreclosure thing and you wanted to know if TILA would help your situation, where would you send them? We're going to put Neil's blog up, but where would you say would be the most valuable information that they could find to start educating themselves, because they cannot depend upon their lawyers, because the lawyers, for the most part, are not going to give them this information?
Well, that's true, and it's in 2006 is when the judges were summarily throwing TILA out as, you know, non-applicable. It's only now, because of the Supreme Court, that it's now become applicable. So first of all, with the article or the blog that Neil has, there's also a series of documents, worksheets for TILA precisely, so that they can download those documents free from his website, and they can start learning and figuring out what to do. I would recommend that they Google the Truth in Lending Act and actually read it. Yes. And understand it. I would recommend that they take their loan documents, their note, and their mortgage, and get very familiar with everything in it. You want to look at dates. You want to look at signatures. By the way, with my loan, the bank fabricated my signature. It was misspelled. and it wasn't the way I signed my signature. And yet the judge looked at me like I had two heads when I said, that's not my signature. And yep. she looked at the plaintiff's attorney and rolled her eyes as if I was some big liar.
When it was very obvious, yeah.
It was very obvious.
It was so obvious. I mean, if people could know how many errors we found just in your case.
Oh.
See, I worked with Christina on this. I read every single one of her documents. I know what she's talking about. We had robo-signers all over the place. We had forged signatures. We had the Nation Star, who was supposed to be the loan person, you know, the originator. There was so much fraud in this case.
And it was unreal.
It was unreal.
And so, here's the topper to me, is I brought to the court the fact that our Attorney General, Pam Bondi, wrote this entire report. And in the report, it says how to look for fraud in your case. Okay, and she gave Lehman Brothers going bankrupt as an example of a defunct entity that couldn't possibly have transferred and assigned your mortgage if they were in bankruptcy when the assignment took place. Never mind that there were other things that were wrong with the assignments. I brought this whole report to the court or in my paperwork, and they don't care. They don't care. Lehman Brothers was bankrupt and had no ability. They were in receivership with their bankruptcy, and they could not have assigned it to Aurora, and Aurora couldn't have assigned it to NationStar because Lehman Brothers, it's ludicrous. So, folks, what you need to do is get so familiar with everything on your documents and be meticulous about what is there. And With the TILA, you'll begin to understand as you read Neil's blog and as you download the documents he has there, and whatever resources we can give you, we will on our website. But you just have to understand that there are certain cases that he's talking about that you will be able to rescind the note and mortgage. And that's as far as I'm going to go right now, because there's just so much more to it, and I think they really need to read.
And the biggest thing that I want to say is that when you started out with this, you didn't know any of this. This was only a year ago. You know, you didn't know anything. Jenny, I'm sure you would say the same thing. I would say the same thing. When I started working with my brother on this child support, we didn't know anything. When I got this first paperwork, you know, it was such Greek to me. But I'm going to tell you something. Because I have stuck with it, I know what it says now and I know what it means. And I can help you understand. And as more and more and more and more of us begin to do this, and we have these conversations around our living rooms like we are, then you can begin to get it. And you can teach yourself. It is not that complicated. It will feel like it to start with. But wouldn't you say, Jen?
Absolutely. When I got started, I hated looking at legal documents.
Oh.
Through my business, I never wanted to look at that stuff. I would hand it off, you know, to whoever on my staff or, you know, whoever I hired to do those sorts of things for me, you know, lawyers or CPAs or what have you. And then when this happened and I had to learn it, I had to just dig in there and study Black's Law and Bouvier's and really realize that there's an entirely different definition to all the terminology from what we think it is versus what they use it as. And you know, that's a big key right there, is just getting in there and getting a hold of a Black's Law dictionary and really trying to understand what you think the document says versus what they are really saying. Another thing I want to point out is fraud voids a contract.
Yes.
There is no time frame on that.
That's right. And that's what TILA is. That's what Neil is bringing out about TILA, is that though it's supposed to have a 3-year statute of limitations, when there's fraud in the execution, fraud in the offer, there's no statute of limitations. It's
right.
Void and null and void. Now, what he's saying also is that that doesn't mean you don't owe money. He's saying that you owe the money to the investors, but that it's an unsecured loan. So that's even more complicated than I could possibly go into, because I'm not a financial person at all. I'm just like, you know, just like you, Jenny, I hated looking at this, and I've forced myself as much as I can. And there are certain areas where I read and I just go blank. It's like, okay, never mind, you know, and it's okay. At least I understand the majority of it, but.
Right. You just have to reread it several times, because, you know, it takes a little bit, because we're not used to reading that kind of document, you know, for it to sink in. And it eventually does, you know, and once you go down the rabbit hole and you start learning this stuff, you can't stop. You can't unlearn what you've learned.
Yes.
And you know, you just find out that the rabbit trails just go all over the place. It's not just in the financial system, loan system. It's in everything that our lives touch.
And so as you begin to learn how sneakily they put a slavery contract on every single one of us, then your job is to cancel that contract. And that really is what we are doing. Now, if you had not gone through learning all these documents and everything for yourself, would you be able to understand how much the courts had done all of this to us and why we have to say non-consent is no longer an option? Because when you realize that they have bound up our free will, they have bound us body, mind, and soul, S-O-L-E, by stamping our sole of our foot on that birth certificate event, then we become determined that we have to do something about this. And hey, you know, nobody else is going to do it for you. So, you know, that's a big part of what these shows are about. It's like, okay, you know, each one of us, as we just do our little bit the best we can, we're joined by so many other people, and we hold each other's hands. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Christina and I were on the phone last year and the year before as she was going through this, and how many letters I wrote to my friend Mac during that 8 years. I mean, I have, just like Jenny's file folders full, I have file folders of that information as I learned going through this horrible, horrible thing with this man who had become my brother, and with my own brother and his child support. We learned to help each other. That's what it's going to take to get us out of this situation.
Yes, and actually, to give people hope, is that there are massive numbers of people who are taking action. And that's, we hope with this show that we will get the word out to massive numbers more who will take responsibility and make this shift happen, and really turn things around.
And I really want to send a shout out to these people all across the world who somehow find this show. We're not, you know, we're the ones who are dealing with this situation in the United States. But let me tell you something. This is a worldwide movement. My friend Jan in South Africa, I want to thank you for getting in touch with us this week and bringing your network. I mean, 150,000 emails they're sharing with us. EFRA with Chris Everly there in London, he's beginning to work with South Africans. We're working with all these groups in Australia and Canada and, you know, just all across Peru. We send word to the Chabot Shaman, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Allison, for giving your prayers to Rod and doing all of these things to reach out to us. It's just amazing to us how much, you know, this little show, is we're getting word out, and as we're really working together to create solutions that work for everybody.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're just going to give a shout out and get in touch with us, volunteer, you know. And there's one other thing that I'm just going to mention, because Andrew Bartzis just did so much for us to get this show off the ground. Andrew with Galactic Historian and Adventures into Reality, he paid for the whole first year as we got our show off the ground. Well, right now, we've got a donate button on our site, and we're asking for help because of all of the things that we're doing. You know, if you like the shows and you really want to be even more a part, volunteer, or give us a donation, you know, just a monthly donation would help us do the work. As we begin to take on all of these expenses, we will be doing a full fundraiser over Valentine's as we're really getting started on all of this. We have several different things. Christina's working on several webinars. We're all working on several things to help you with the education as we get into this year. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, and that is one way you can help. If you just have, you know, some extra dollars and you want to donate, we encourage you to become part of this project in whatever you would like to.
Even if it's $1. I mean, $1 is precious to us. I just want to mention that some of what we're going to be talking about and some of the webinars we're going to be bringing is to help people in the area of health and well-being, because that is also tied into the whole corrupt government and the FDA, and we're going to be talking about cancer alternatives, we're going to be talking about vaccines, we're going to be talking about our food supply, GMOs, and the raping of our environment. We're going to be talking about a lot of things.
And law and sovereignty really is the critical key, because until we get ourselves out from under these corporations who are just posing as our government, and we can show you just right down to the wire how they're anything but what they say they are, we've got to get these people out from under control of our whole lives. And so that's a big part of what we're about here. And I really want to thank Wes and Jen for coming on and having so much to share tonight. I mean, you know, we're all just such kindred spirits as we've worked together this year. And we just are going to absolutely hold on to the fact that you are going to be back in your dream home before we can turn around here. That's my prayer for the year.
Thank you very much, and we're happy to be here and, you know, do whatever we can to help others.
Well, this has been a very fast and furious show. We hope all of you have enjoyed it. And next week, we'll be back same time, same station. And we have some of the lawyers lined up who are really into exposing this. We brought several of them on. We have a guy who is an expert on the IRS coming in later. And we also want to be teaching about natural law. I really want to get an interview Cindy K. Courier, who is just one of the experts on natural law. Don't forget, if you haven't taken time to watch that video with Wes and Jen that Cindy did, it's posted on the newsletter. Go back and do that. Get involved.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Jenny and Wes. And
we pray.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes. We pray you get your house back every day.
Yes,
thank you
we do.
So much.
And thank you, Don and Santi in the background, and all of the other people who helped put this show on. And we'll look forward to seeing you then again next week. Good night, all.
Good night.
Night. Bye.